I'm Rachel Martin. After hosting Morning Edition for years, I know that the news can wear you down. So we made a new podcast called Wild Card, where a special deck of cards and a whole bunch of fascinating guests help us sort out what makes life meaningful. It's part game show, part existential deep dive, and it is seriously fun. Join me on Wild Card, wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
Late Show Poncho listeners can get 20% off on all Late Show with Stephen Colbert merchandise on ParamountShop.com. That's 20% off at checkout on all Late Show shirts, mugs, accessories, and more with code TLS20 at ParamountShop.com. It's The Late Show Poncho with Stephen Colbert.
Ladies and gentlemen, my next guest tonight is a pastor, politician, and author who currently serves as a United States Senator from Georgia. Please welcome Senator Raphael Warnock.
Wow.
Senator, thank you for being here.
Sounds like my church on a Sunday morning.
Now, the January 6th hearings are underway. You were elected Georgia's first black senator in 2020, a historic win. But that historic win is juxtaposed against a very different vision of America. White nationalism is on the rise. A lot of these Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, these sort of Christian nationalists and white nationalist organizations were involved in the January 6th assault on the Capitol. Do you have any thoughts on what the committee has shown us so far?
Well, you're right. I was elected on January 5th. Georgia did an amazing thing. In one fell swoop, the state of Georgia sent its first African-American senator and its first Jewish senator to the United States Senate. Mm-hmm. Oh, and I mean, when you think about that over against our very complicated history, and the darkest moments in our history. That's quite an accomplishment. It makes me proud as a Georgian. And as you point out, the next day, we saw a violent assault on our Capitol. Anti-Semitic and racist signs trafficked through our Capitol. Police brutalized, people lost their lives. Here's the thing, we don't get to pretend that January 6th didn't happen. We don't get to gloss over that. It did happen. Those were not tourists going through the Capitol. January 6th happened, and it shows a part of our complicated family story as Americans. But January 5th also happened. Georgia sent a kid who grew up in public housing on the west side of Savannah, Georgia. I'm number 11 out of 12 children in my family, the first college graduate. And today I sit in a United States Senate seat once held by an arch segregationist who sat in the seat when I was born. That is the beauty of America. And we've got to decide in this moment, are we going to be the America of January 6th or the America of January 5th? I choose January 5th. I choose hope.
Well, as many people out there may know, you were replacing an open Senate seat, and therefore you're up for re-election again in the midterms in November. What do people need to know about these midterms?
Well, look, the beauty is that in America, we're a government for and by the people. So the people get to have their say, and I can just tell you that it's the honor of my life. Nowhere else is my story possible. You know, the year I went off to college, went to Morehouse College chasing Martin Luther King Jr., something about his spirit captured my imagination. I was born a year after his death. But the year I went to Morehouse College, my family's income was about equal to the tuition, room, and board. I often say I went to Morehouse on a full faith scholarship. Mm-hmm. Means I didn't have enough for the first semester. But I got there through Pell Grants, low-interest student loans. Prior to that, good federal public policy. Prior to that, I was an Upward Bound student, which was another federal program that put a poor kid on a college campus, allowed me to imagine myself there. And even before that, I'm an alum of Head Start, another good federal program that gives poor 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds an opportunity by opening their minds to the world of reading and literacy, dealing with that word gap. I like to say to smart people when I'm speaking to sophisticated audiences that I know you think you're pretty smart now, but you'll never be as smart as you were when you were 4 years old. So what I'm saying is that I know firsthand the difference that good federal public policy makes. It gives people a chance to make the best out of their lives. And I look forward to talking to the people of Georgia about what we've achieved and about the work that I look forward to doing.
Now, you describe yourself as a senator, not as a senator who used to be a pastor, but a pastor in the Senate. Are you still pastor at Ebenezer Baptist?
Yes, I preach every Sunday.
Okay. You're a senator and you go home and preach. Now, this is the church, for people who don't know, where Martin Luther King was co-pastor.
Right.
What does it mean to you to go back there every Sunday and to preach from that pulpit?
Well, as I said, I wanted to go to Dr. King's school. I didn't know I'd become the pastor of his church. And so it's a real honor to preach there every Sunday. And it is part of what keeps me grounded in the Senate. The last thing I want to do is talk to politicians all the time. I'm afraid I might accidentally become one. I was in the airport the other day, and this woman, she recognized me, but she didn't know why. And finally, she said, "Are you a politician?" I said, "I sure hope not. I'm in elected office, but I want to remain a public servant who serves in the office. And when I'm on the floor of the Senate trying to reduce the cost of insulin, I have an insulin bill which would reduce people's out-of-pocket cost to $35 per month per individual. I'm thinking about the families I've sat with whom I've seen struggle with diabetes when they've gotten the news that they have to have an amputation or will have to go on dialysis. $1 in $4 in our healthcare system is spent on somebody with diabetes. And so if we cap the costs, not only do we help those individuals, I think we do a lot in addressing our overall healthcare system. So the work that I do as a pastor and showing up and moving in the community, and people are surprised to see me in the grocery store. Mm-hmm. One of the things I've learned as a pastor is you can't serve the people if you don't spend time with the people, if you don't love the people. And that's the work that I'm trying to do. I think there's no shortage of transactional politicians in Washington who are so focused on the next election that they're not thinking about the next generation. That is what caused you to be unable to do anything after Columbine, after Sandy Hook. It's politicians thinking about themselves. So, yeah, I got an election, but I'm gonna stay focused on the people.
You have a new book, A Way Out of No Way, and I want to ask you about that in title in just one moment. But you talk about going back and preaching on Sundays. Is there a particular verse of scripture that gives you solace, that keeps you going in hard times when things seem hopeless to you?
You shouldn't ask me about a single verse of scripture.
I know you're a pastor, but give me your top three.
I grew up in a household where even when we weren't quoting scripture, my parents sounded like they were quoting scripture. always in the King James English. You know, thou shalt wash the dishes. let's not smite thee with my rod and my staff. Look, I grew up in the South. But, you know, in these tough times, I've been going back and back again and again to that verse in the Gospel of John, chapter 1. where it says, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness overcometh it not. It is the recognition that the days are difficult, that the times are dark, and yet there's a light that pierces through, that breaks through. And I think all of us ought to try to be part of that light.
So where does the title come from, A Way Out of No Way? What is this from?
Oh, it's deep in the culture of the black church. You're not in a black church for long before you hear somebody say, either from the pulpit or in a song or a testimony, that God makes a way out of no way. That is a kind of faith born of struggle, of oppression, and yet keeping the faith and hoping against hope, and getting up and putting one foot in front of the other and pressing on even when you're not exactly sure how you're going to get there. And it is a sense that as you make your way, God makes a way out of no way. We work in partnership with God and with others to do the good work.
Your dear friend, John Lewis, was also one of the parishioners there. Yeah. What did his example mean to you?
John Lewis is an enduring inspiration for me. I met him when I was a college student. We had an event at the school, and he showed up. And I don't remember what he said, but it was just his presence that meant so much. And then later I became his pastor. He reminds me in times like these that we have to keep the faith, that we have to continue to get in what he called good trouble. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had the honor of presiding over his funeral. And when I think about a young John Lewis crossing the Edmund Pettus Bridge, wearing a trench coat, backpack, he didn't have any reason to believe that he could win. I sometimes wonder, what was he thinking? Here's what I know. He was not thinking that one day at his funeral, three American presidents would show up at Ebenezer Church on both sides of the aisle. He wasn't thinking that he'd be the recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom. I think he was probably just trying to stay alive that day so he could fight the next day. But somehow, through some stroke of destiny, mingled with human determination, he managed to bend that arc a little bit closer towards justice. And that's our job, to keep bending that arc. And so when I think about him, even in times like this, who am I to give up? Who am I to be cynical in a moment like this? I take the long view and keep doing the work.
Senator, thank you for being here.
So good.
Thank you so much. Nice to meet you.
This has been The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert. If you're enjoying The Late Show Pod Show, leave us a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Watch The Late Show with Stephen Colbert weeknights at 11:35, 10:35 Central on CBS and Paramount Plus. And for more exclusive Late Show content, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and subscribe to The Late Show on YouTube.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Jordana Abraham.
And I'm Dr. Naomi Bernstein.
And we want to tell you about Calm the F*** Down, a guided meditation series from the Oversharing podcast. This is something we've been planning for a long time. It's our most requested segment from the podcast. And these meditations are going to be between 5 and 10 minutes. They're going to be super quick because we don't have a lot of time. You're going to be so surprised how 5 to 10 minutes of really thoughtful meditations can transform your whole life. In addition to the first 4 meditations available at launch, we'll be doing 2 new meditations every single month. Plus, for the fans of Oversharing Podcast out there, you'll also get ad-free versions of every episode of the Oversharing Podcast.
So if somebody wants to become a subscriber, how do they join?
It's so easy. You just go to subscribe.betches.com and sign up now for only $4.99 a month. Or you can lock in our discounted rate if you sign up for the whole year. That's subscribe.betches.com. Or if you're in the Apple Podcasts app, you can just hit the subscribe button now and sign up in the app. It's as easy as that.